Welcome to Seeking Truth with Sharon Doran. Sharon has a passion for Scripture that will motivate and challenge you to immerse yourself in God's Word and apply His message to your everyday life. Visit SeekingTruth.net to learn more about bringing Seeking Truth to your parish or to become an online learner. Today, it's part one of the second book of Samuel, chapters 12 through 19. And now, Seeking Truth with Sharon Doran.
Tonight, we are studying David and the Psalms, and we are doing 2 Samuel chapters 12 to 19 and Psalm number 3. The theme tonight is heavy is the head that wears the crown. Some of you might be familiar with the miniseries, The Crown. You know, heavy is the head that wears the crown. This is the imperial state crown, one of the crown jewels in the United Kingdom, the crown, and it symbolizes the sovereignty of the monarch. It has 2,901 precious stones, including St. Edward's sapphire, a beautiful diamond, prince's black ruby. That crown weighs 4 pounds and 9 ounces, almost 5 pounds. It's heavy. The crown is heavy, literally in its weight. But I'm talking about a different heaviness. Heaviness is the head that wears the crown. Queen Elizabeth once joked that she can't look, when she has that crown on her head, she can't look down to read the speech because she said your neck would break. Her neck would snap off and the crown would fall. It's that heavy. Heavy is the head that wears the crown. Lately, the queen has been opting for a lighter diamond-studded crown, and the imperial crown sits on a table next to her. It's just too heavy for her neck anymore. Shakespeare wrote of King Henry IV, "Uneasy lies the head that wears the crown." This has become an English euphemism, an English idiom, meaning that those charged with major responsibility carry a heavy burden that makes it difficult for them to rest. Heavy is the head that wears the crown. Now, the Lord asked his high priest to wear a crown. It was a little bit different type of crown. It was a golden plate. It's in Exodus 39. They made a plate of a holy crown of pure gold and wrote upon it an inscription, the engraving of a signet that said, "Holy to the Lord." And they tied it with blue ribbons and fastened it around the turban on the head of the high priest, "Holy to the Lord." Heavy is the head that wears the crown, talking about the weightiness of leadership and the difficulty of owning up to our own sinfulness and our own weakness as a leader. We know that David had a heart for the Lord. He repented after his sin with Bathsheba and the murder of Uriah. "God, have mercy on me for your goodness." He had lusted after another man's wife. David sent inquiry about the woman. He was told it's the daughter of Eliam. Remember that. That's coming up later. He's the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah. David ordered that she be brought to him. Messengers were sent and they took her. And she came to him and he lay with her. And she had just done her purification rite and she was at the peak of her fertility and she conceived a son. David then sent word to Joab, "Send me Uriah," her husband, the Hittite. And he ordered Uriah, "Go down to your house and wash your feet." He wanted him to be intimate with his wife, but he wouldn't hear of it because he was too loyal to the king as one of his soldiers. And so he was commanded by Joab at David's order to send Uriah to the front line where he would be killed for sure. He dies. Bathsheba mourns for 7 days before becoming yet another wife, the 8th wife of King David. The Lord sent his prophet with his direct word to David. Nathan the prophet came to David and told him a parable, a story about a rich man who took the poor man's one little ewe. And it was a deplorable story. And David's heart was convicted. And Nathan said to David, "You are that man. David, you are that man. That is what you did. You are the man." And David's heart was pierced. And Nathan went on to tell him that the sword will never depart from your house now, David, because you have despised me. You have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. The sword will never depart from David's house as a consequence of his sin. There will be continual violence in his household. We're going to see that tonight, the consequences of sin. And this is what else the Lord said, according to Nathan, "Out of your own household, I'm going to bring calamity on you. Before your very eyes, I will take your wives and give them to one who is close to you." That's going to happen tonight. "He will sleep with your wives in broad daylight." That was the word that David got from Nathan the prophet, and David knows Nathan's words always come true because of the words of the Lord. David's son Absalom tonight will have sexual intercourse on top of David's own roof with 10 of David's concubines in broad daylight for all of Israel to see. This will be a huge power play on Absalom's part to usurp his father's kingdom. Back to Nathan said, "You did it secretly, David, but I will do this thing before all in Israel and before the sun." In broad daylight, David said to Nathan, "I have sinned. I have sinned against the Lord." David had the greatest contrition, and this is what makes him a man after the Lord's own heart. He admitted his sinfulness. He repented. He had remorse, and the Lord knew his heart. The Lord will forgive anything if we just soften our heart and go to confession and confess it. There's nothing he won't forgive, but we have to admit and confess. So Nathan said to David, "The Lord has also put away your sin. You shall never die. Nevertheless," okay, David should have died, right? According to all Torah laws that the king is to write once a year in Leviticus, David should, he had an illicit sexual affair with a married woman. That's adultery. That's a commandment. He should have been stoned to death. He also killed a man, should have been stoned to death. The Lord said, "You shall not die." The Lord will relent because of his heart, because of his contrite heart. "Nevertheless, because you have done this, you have utterly scorned the Lord, the child that you conceived in this illicit union, the child will die." And the Lord struck David's child. David therefore besought God for the child. David fasted. David prayed. He prayed that God wouldn't do it, that he would relent. But on the seventh day after its birth, the child died. And the servants of David were afraid to tell David. They were afraid to tell David that his child was dead. "Behold, while the child was yet alive, we spoke to him, and David did not listen to us. How then can we say to him that the child is dead? He may do himself self-harm. He may do something drastic." So they were afraid to tell David. Tonight, another son of David, actually two sons of David, will die, and everyone will be afraid to tell the king that his sons are dead. David had to accept the death of his firstborn son with Bathsheba. He comforted his wife. He went into her. He lied with her, and she bore a son. And they called his name Solomon. The Lord loved him. The Lord loved this child. This child is not conceived in sin. This child was conceived through marriage of these two, an eighth wife. The Lord sent message by Nathan the prophet that this child's name should be called Jedidiah in the Hebrew. Jedidiah is a Hebrew name derived meaning beloved of Yah, Jedidiah, beloved of Yahweh, beloved of God. God loved this child. So the first son conceived in sin would not be blessed by God, but the second one, Jedidiah, loved by, beloved of Yah, would be blessed by God. And he will carry on the family line eventually, but we got to get through a lot before that. So just to refresh your memory, Boaz and Ruth had a baby named Obed. Obed had a baby boy named Jesse. We learned about Netzavet last time, the wife of Jesse. Jesse and Netzavet had eight sons. David is the eighth. And just a little bit of review, David, number eight, took eight wives. In the Bible, we see that David has eight wives by name that we know of, and 10 concubines. And before monogamy was legally imposed, concubinage was very common, especially among nobility, the purpose being to ensure a male heir to the throne. A lot of guys would die in battle. Sons would die in battle. Sons would die with no antibiotics. Sons would die in childbirth. So the more sons, the better. We know that Michal, David's first wife, had no children. Her womb had been sealed shut. The next wife, the second wife, had Amnon. We'll hear about him tonight. The next wife, Abigail, had Chileab. He's also called Daniel. That son we don't hear much about because it's questionable if he was Nabal's son or David's son. He was born shortly 9 months after Abigail joined the squad. He's kind of out of the picture. The next son up for the heir would be Absalom. We'll talk a lot about him tonight. So David's family tree is big, is what I'm saying, and it gets a little bit confusing. So I always go back to a chart and check characters. Solomon, Jedidiah, will go on. He's going to be the one that's going to carry it out. This is the one Jesus Christ, Messiah, will come from. And Solomon will go on to have 700 wives and 300 concubines. And his wives will turn his heart away. The Lord warned against that. Solomon was old and his wives turned his heart away after other little g gods. His heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. So back to David's heart, even though he's a sinful man, oh, he has a heart for the Lord. So there's Solomon. Could be a Jeopardy question. His other name is Yedidiah, don't forget. And that's where Jesus Christ is coming from, that line. Yedidiah, beloved of God. Now, Joab fought after this at Rabbah. He fought the Ammonites, the headquarters, the king's city of the Ammonites, the royal city. And Joab sent messengers to David saying, you know, I've almost conquered this entire city. Where are you? I've taken the water supply. You better get out here or this is going to be named after me. So David gathered all the people. He went to Rabbah. He fought against it and he took it. So we see David fighting with his men again. That's something he had not done when he was lying around up on his rooftop lusting after Bathsheba. He's back in now with his men fighting. And David took the crown from their king, from his head. And the weight of that crown was 1 talent of gold. And it had precious stones in it as well. And it was placed on David's head. This is the first time we see David wearing a crown. And heavy is the head that wears the crown, literally, because 1 talent is 35 kilograms or 75 pounds. So this crown that he took from the king of the Ammonites was a 75-pound gold crown, and David wore it. That's a heavy crown. The value of that crown today, pure gold, would be close to $2 million. The Ammonites then are captured by David. He takes the spoil of their city. He brings forth the people and makes them labor with saws and iron picks and iron axes. And David makes them toil at brick making in kilns. Who's that sound like? Yeah, that sounds like what Pharaoh did to them. Exactly. Making them make bricks so that he could build Jerusalem, the city of peace for God. Now, Absalom, David's son, had a beautiful sister. Now, I want you to look where Absalom is. It's wife number 4, Maacah. She is a princess from Geshur. Her father is a king, and she marries King David as wife number 4, and they have Absalom and Tamar, a sister that we hear of today. Absalom, David's son, had a beautiful sister whose name was Tamar, and after a time, Amnon, David's son, from wife number 2, David's son loved Tamar. Amnon was so tortured, he made himself ill because of his sister Tamar. She was a virgin, and it seemed impossible to Amnon to do anything to her. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab. Those are David's brothers at the top, and one of David's brother's sons. So it's a first cousin. A first cousin named Jonadab, the son of Shimei, David's brother. And Jonadab was a very crafty man. And when you hear the word crafty in the Bible, who do you think? Who is the first person in the Bible called crafty or clever or subtle or cunning or crafty? Satan. That's not a good quality. So Jonadab, the crafty cousin, said to Amnon, "Oh, son of the king, why are you haggard morning after morning? Will you not tell me?" And Amnon said, "I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister." Jonadab said to him, "Lie on your bed and pretend to be ill. And when your father comes to see you, say to him, 'Let my sister Tamar come and give me bread to eat, and prepare the food in my sight that I may see it and eat from her hand.'" Well, Tamar is from wife number 4, Absalom's sister. And Amnon laid down, he pretended to be ill. And when the king came to see him, Amnon said to the king, "Pray, let my sister Tamar come and make cakes in my sight." And David went home and said to Tamar, "Go to your brother Amnon's house and prepare food for him." So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house where he was lying. She took dough, she kneaded it, she made the cakes, she baked the cakes, she took the pan, she emptied it out before him, but he refused to eat. And Amnon said, "Send everyone out from me." So everyone went out from him. Then Amnon said to Tamar, "Bring the food into the chamber so I may eat it from your hand." And Tamar took the cakes that she had made and brought them into the chamber to Amnon, her brother. But when she brought them near him to eat, he took hold of her and said to her, "Come lie with me, my sister." And she answered him, "No, no, my brother, do not force me, for such a thing is not done in Israel. Do not do this wanton folly." Now, she knew her scripture. She knew Leviticus 18, "You shall not uncover the nakedness of your sister, the daughter of your father, or the daughter of your mother, whether born at home or born abroad. As for me, where could I hide my shame?" she says. "As for you, you would be one of the wanton fools of Israel. Now, therefore, I pray you, speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you." She says there's a way we could do this legally, where we could both save our reputations and both save from being in sin. "Let's talk to dad." Let's talk to Dad. Heavy is the head that wears the crown. Amnon was not only uncovering the nakedness of his half-sister, but he's also would be defiling a virgin. We're told she's a virgin. That is another law against God in Deuteronomy 22. If a man happens to meet a virgin who is not pledged to be married and he rapes her and they are discovered, he will pay her father 50 shekels of silver. He must marry the young woman, for he has violated her, and he can never divorce her as long as he lives. So, there's a couple precedents of law here, Torah. Now, therefore, I pray you speak to the king, because she also knows this. After all, Abraham, the father of our faith, was legally married to his half-sister, Sarah. We could tell Dad, we could go on that precedent. Now, therefore, I pray you speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you. But he would not listen to her. And being stronger than her, he forced her and lay with her. This was rape. Then Amnon hated her with a very great hatred, so that the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he had loved her. All of a sudden, everything has changed. Amnon did not love Tamar. He lusted after her. Rape is not love. He loved the idea of conquering her and then projected everything else onto her. Like his father David, a woman was the object of his lust. He even calls her a woman now. Get this woman out of here, not Tamar, my half-sister. And like his father, Amnon too would engage in an illicit sexual union, which in the Bible we know is called an uncovering. All those Levitical uncoverings. Amnon said to her, "Arise, be gone." But she said to him, "No, my brother, for this wrong is sending me away. This is a greater wrong than the other that you did to me." But he would not listen to her. He called the young man who served him and said, "Put this woman out of my presence," and bolt the door after her. This woman, this defiled virgin half-sister of mine. And she was wearing a long robe with sleeves. That's what the virgin daughters of the king were clad in of old. And his servant put her out and bolted the door after her. And Tamar put ashes on her head. She rent the long robe. She ripped it, the robe she wore. And she laid her hand on her head and went away crying aloud as she went. And her brother Absalom said to her, "Has Amnon your brother been with you? Now hold your peace, my sister. He is your brother. Do not take this to heart." So Tamar dwelt a desolate woman in her brother Absalom's house for the rest of her life. She is a defiled virgin. The seal has been broken. She cannot be in a covenant marriage. She'll be a desolate woman all her life with no children and no husband. Now, when King David heard all these things, he was very angry. But Absalom spoke to Amnon, neither good nor bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because of what he had forced on his sister Tamar. Heavy is the head that wears the crown. David was very, very angry, but David did absolutely nothing to discipline his son. David took no disciplinary action as a father. Proverbs tells us, "He who spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him." Sirach 7, "Do you have children? Discipline them and make them obedient from their youth." Sirach 30, "Discipline your son and take pains with him, that you may not be offended by his shamelessness." And Hebrews 12 in the New Testament, "It is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without disciplining, in which all have participated, then you are illegitimate children and not sons." Besides this, we have all had earthly fathers discipline us, and we respected them. So disciplining a son or a daughter is a good thing. And David's eldest son, Amnon, who was next in line to the throne, made the same error as David. He had an illicit sexual encounter. David does not correct him, does not discipline him, does not uphold the Torah law. Why? Why? Maybe David didn't want to be a hypocrite. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Do as I say, but not as I do. I don't know. Maybe he was passive. A lot of passivity in the Bible, especially with some of the males from Adam to Isaac, Jacob. There's some passivity. It's a comfortable trap for people. Patience with children is a great virtue. Passivity is not. King David was very angry, but he offered no discipline to his son Amnon. Sexual sin, uncovering nakedness, is destroying the house of David. David had uncovered the nakedness of another man's wife, which was condemned in Leviticus 18. King David's new Eden was Jerusalem. And like King Adam, King David does not shamar his garden. He does not guard and protect his own household. Adam and Eve are naked and unashamed before the fall, but after the fall, they cover their privates. They cover themselves. And anything that's uncovered now will be a sexual sin, an illicit sexual sin. Uncovering nakedness is any sexual sin outside the bounds of a covenantal marriage between the Trinity of God, a husband, and a wife. So sexual sin, uncovering nakedness, continues on in the house of David. 2 full years have passed since this rape incident of Tamar. And 2 full years later, Absalom has an idea that he's going to have a great big sheep shearing festival. And he invites the king and all of the king's sons. He invites all of them, including Amnon, the rapist of Tamar, that he's been holding a grudge against, and who's next in line for the throne, by the way. And with sheep shearing, a lot of wool is on the ground, a lot of money is made, and a lot of celebrating is done with a lot of booze after the work is done. And so Absalom invites the king to go, but David didn't want to go. He said he didn't want to be a burden. Absalom begged and begged and begged and begged repeatedly. Could all the other sons go? Could all the other sons go? Could all the other sons go? And do you have you ever had a kid that wears you down like that? Hey, can we do, yeah, everyone's going, can we get, and finally you say, yeah. Okay, just go, but make good choices. Absalom pressed David until he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. David does not want all his sons going, because if they all are killed, there will be no heir to the throne in Israel. When Amnon's heart is merry with wine, then I'll say to you, strike Amnon and then kill him. Fear not, for I have commanded you, be courageous and be valiant. So we see a mirror image, David's household. They are mirroring exactly what their father did. First, it's going to be uncovering nakedness and illicit sexual union, followed by murder, exactly what their father had done. So the servants of Absalom did to Amnon as Absalom had commanded, and the king's sons arose and mounted their mules and fled. While they were on their way, tidings came to David. Absalom has slain all the king's sons. Not one of them is left. The king arose, he rent his garments, he lay on the earth, his servants were called, he's standing there renting his garments, just beside himself. And Jonadab, that crafty cousin who encouraged Amnon to rape Tamar, that very crafty guy, said, let not my lord suppose that they have killed all the young men of the king's sons, for Amnon alone is dead. For it's by the command of Absalom. This has been determined from the day he forced his sister Tamar, which, by the way, Jonadab encouraged him to do, remember? Now, therefore, let not my lord the king take heart to suppose that all the king's sons are dead, for Amnon alone is dead. So paint the worst case scenario and then rush in and save the day. Absalom fled. Jonadab said to the king, behold, the king's sons have come, as your servant me have said, and only one is dead. All the rest are fine. The king was relieved, but he and all his servants wept bitterly. Absalom flees. And where does Absalom go? To the king of Geshur. Why? Because that's his maternal grandpa. His mother's father is the king of Geshur. Now, where is Geshur? Way, 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 way up north beyond the Sea of Galilee. And Jerusalem is way, 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 way south. And Jerusalem is the largest city. The city sit on a hill, the city where the Ark of the Covenant is now is. And Geshur is podunk nothing. So he is going to take cover. Now he'll be a prince up there, because his grandfather is the king of Geshur. So he will be Prince Absalom, and he will have a comfortable palace to live in with Grandpa Geshur. And David is mourning for his son day after day after day. Absalom has gone to Geshur, and he has been there for 3 full years. Remember, with Amnon dead, Absalom is next in line to take the throne when David dies. Now, the spirit of King David longed to go forth to Absalom. He was comforted about Amnon seeing that he was dead. Absalom had done his father's disciplining for him, but in a sinful way through murder. So Joab now, the son of Zeruiah, that's David's sister. This is David's nephew. He's the commander of his army, if you remember. He perceives that the king's heart had gone out to his son Absalom. And Joab sends a woman from Tekoa. She's a very wise woman. And he tells tells her, pretend that you're a mourner and put on mourning garments and anoint yourself with oil and behave like a woman who has been mourning for many, many days for the dead, and go to King David and speak this to him. So Joab put all the words in her mouth that he wanted to relay to King David. This is very reminiscent of God put all the words into Nathan's mouth that he wanted to relay to David through a story, through a parable, remember? Now this woman's going to do it. The woman at Tekoa came to the king. She fell on her face to the ground and did obeisance. Help, O king. And the king said to her, what is it? What is your trouble? And she said, alas, I am a widow. My husband is dead. Your handmaid had two sons. They quarreled with one another in the field, and there was no one to part them, and one struck the other and killed him. Does that sound like any Bible story you've ever heard before? Two boys out in a field and one brother kills the other brother and innocent blood is on the ground? Yeah. Two sons quarreling in a field, one strikes the other and kills him, and innocent blood is crying out from the cursed earth. Sounds a lot like Cain and Abel. And remember how God the Father disciplined Cain? Since he killed his brother and it was innocent blood, did God strike Cain dead? No, he exiled him far, far away to the east. And God did something else. He put a mark on Cain's head, remember? And was that mark a good mark or a bad mark? God said, this mark will protect you. It's a good mark. It will protect him. So he's marked and exiled. Just like Absalom, he's not stoned to death for the murder of his brother Amnon. He should have been. He had servants do his dirty work. It wasn't his own hands that did the murder. He might have claimed that. But he was banished. He was exiled away from the father to the kingdom of Geshur with his maternal grandfather. And he's still marked as the king of Israel's son. And next in line, the heir to the throne. And this kid's pretty hot on himself. Absalom wants to be the king, not of Geshur, not of Podunk Grandpa's little dinky kingdom way up north, but his deepest identity is as a son of the king of Israel, who he succeeds. He is next in line to that royal throne, and he can taste it. And he doesn't want dinky little kingdom of Geshur way up north. He wants whole honkin' Israel. So back to this wise woman. She tells the story of her son's dying. And now the whole family has risen against your handmaid. And they say, give up the man who struck his brother, that we may kill him for the life of his brother whom he slew. And so they would destroy the heir also. Thus they would quench my coal which is left, and leave to my husband neither name nor remnant upon the face of the earth. She pleads her case. She tells this story. And it is like that parable of Nathan. It starts to pierce David's heart. Go to your house. I will give orders concerning you. And she says, on me be the guilt, my lord king. On my father's house let the king on his throne be guiltless.
That was part one of the second book of Samuel, chapters 12 through 19, on Seeking Truth with Sharon Doran. To learn more about Seeking Truth Bible studies, visit seekingtruth.net. Tune in next time for more Seeking Truth with Sharon Doran.